There's something about your home that drives you crazy. The question is, what should you do about it? Today, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, will help you decide. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'll talk with Bill about how to assess the trouble spots in your home and the factors you should consider before you take action. Bill will also answer your questions. Then later in the hour, we've made some changes at Iowa Public Radio. Our News and Studio One programming now airs on 90.1 FM in central Iowa, and there have been a few other changes as well. I'll talk about the changes with IPR CEO Mary Grace Harrington and Development Manager Andrew Argenbright. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll spend some time talking about recent program changes at Iowa Public Radio. IPR CEO Mary Grace Harrington will be here, along with a development manager responsible for membership, Andrew Argenbright. You'll also have an opportunity to have your say. But first, it is Home Improvement Day today, and our expert Bill McAnally is here with us. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Charity. How are you?
I'm great. And we're going to talk a little bit about assessing our homes today, right?
Right.
So the idea is, of course, all of us have something in the house or in our wherever we live that we hate. I think that there's probably almost no one that doesn't fall into that category. So you have to decide what to do about that thing that is driving you crazy. Where do you start?
Well, you know, you have to kind of sit back and analyze your lifestyle. You know, there's a lot of things that maybe bug you right now because the house is full of kids, or the neighborhood is full of kids. You know, there's a lot of things that enter into whether you know you really want to think about maybe doing some renovating or possibly, you know, build a new house. But, you know, a lot of us kind of think, oh, man, the house is just so hectic right now. And, you know, I really want to change the kitchen or I need to upgrade, you know, the doors because they're beat up. But, you know, I think sometimes we have to sit back and realize that, you know, sometimes the kids or the family, the way it's operating right now, is only going to be this way for maybe 5, maybe longest, maybe 10 years. So we kind of have to sit back and analyze, well, what about, like, say, the kitchen we don't like? Do we not like the traffic pattern? Is everybody congested at the refrigerator? Is everybody congested when someone, let's say the kids have been drafted into doing the dishes. So you've got 2 or 3 kids that are doing dishes, and nobody can move around. Does the refrigerator congest with that? Does a walkway entry coming from outside? Somebody's walking in with sporting stuff from the kids. That's kind of the usual hectic area, that traffic pattern from, say, a side door through a kitchen, maybe a dining room where they throw everything on the table because it's only used for, what, Thanksgiving, Christmas maybe anyway, you know, or studying. We really have to analyze how we live. And then we have to go back and look at, you know, do we want to maybe look at the remodeling the basement and what kind of condition is the basement in? You know, last month we talked about droughts, conditions causing, you know, problems with foundations. And this week I've talked with someone on the western part of the state, and they're running into, you know, the exact same thing out there with foundations moving around and things. So we've got to maybe prioritize. Do we look at, can we put up with things in the kitchen or you know, busy areas for now and look at something that's actually going to maybe help the house long term? So let's look at the foundation. Let's look at the wiring. Let's look at, you know, maybe some plumbing upgrades where you may need them. Or do we look at, you know, maybe the exterior trying to fit in with outside?
So what you're saying, Bill, is it sounds like you need to do a little psychology with yourself. You need to sit down and say, okay, why is this driving me crazy?
Yeah.
Is it because there's something else in my life that's driving me crazy? Or is it because the kitchen really doesn't work?
Yes. I mean, that's it. You know, it's kind of a topic that's kind of usually looked over. you know, it also comes down, you hate to say it now, is it may drive you crazy and you may want to go ahead and let's redo this kitchen. All right, well, it might run you $10,000, maybe $15,000. The thing we have to look at, especially with the economy the way it is, am I going to have, you know, a secure income? Is a family going to have the same income that we have now or a little bit more in the next few years to possibly pay for this upgrade? And how am I going to finance this upgrade? Am I going to have to take a home equity loan, a second mortgage? The kids are at this hectic stage. Well, also they may possibly be going to college. So unless you've got a family full of brainiacs and you're going to get a full scholarship or something, you know, you have to worry about those expenses. So you have to sit down and like you say, it's things that we kind of skip by. It's not the fun stuff to talk about when you talk about remodeling or assessing your home. But these are the things you have to look at before you even get to that stage. Am I going to feel comfortable having that extra load, say financial load? And how am I going to put up with any kind of a mess or any kind of an upgrade? It's hectic now. And what's it going to be like when they're doing this upgrade? And how long is it going to drag on? Can I do it in small stages, or can I, let's go on a 2-week vacation somewhere. When we come back, the kitchen or whatever we want done is magically finished and it's all cleaned up.
So when you decide, let's say, okay, you have the basics covered. Your plumbing is in good order. Your siding is okay. Your roof looks good for now. Your foundation's not falling apart. So you have the opportunity to be a little nitpicky.
Yeah.
And make some changes. When you look at something, how can you assess cost versus the amount of work that you would have done? Because let's say there are a lot of things about your kitchen that drive you crazy. It might cost less to have the whole thing redone at once than to change things one at a time, right?
Yes, and a lot of times that is the best way. It's this is a good time to bring in someone that, you know, a good kitchen professional, like a kitchen designer, or an architect or a design build person, someone that knows traffic flows, someone that knows lighting, someone that knows plumbing. Because if your plumbing, like you say, let's say your plumbing and electrical is good from, say, the floor on, you know, out to the city system or sewage system if you're in the country. So all you really have to do is some minor plumbing or minor electrical in that kitchen. It's not a big deal then. And it's sometimes is very easy to go ahead and replace all of the kitchen, and you get more usable space. And by usable, I mean as far as the person using the kitchen, that their traffic pattern is much more usable and designed for how the family lives. You know, today's kitchens are vastly different than, you know, kitchens of the 50s and 60s. It seems like, and I'm the same way, it seems like most of the time if we're in the kitchen, we're either we're visiting. It's more of a visiting room. You spend more time there talking than you do dining room. You're leaning up against the counters and the cabinets, you know, or you have a counter area where there's some seating all the way around it. It's a gathering area now. As before, it was more of a food prep area, and it's really probably now right with, you know, your living area. It's ranked right up there where everybody meets and talks. So you have to design that kitchen to that particular lifestyle. And I think, like you said, if you go ahead and redo that whole thing, you're going to be much better off than trying to just solve some little ideas. Plus, it will add value to your house. Now, through all this, we have to keep this mindset that typically we don't want to really add more than 10 to 15% more value to the house sometimes when you compare it to the median houses in your neighborhood. Because if you go to the bank, you know, you have to be able to justify this extra money. And you know, if you're going to invest a lot, they're going to want to know how does it compare to the rest of the houses. Because let's say if things do go bad and the house has to go back to the bank, they want to know that they can sell it and you don't have a whole lot in it that they can't get back. So sometimes these kitchens, you know, you got to maybe hold back a little bit because you can really ramp up the cost. That's probably the easiest place to go from 0 to 100 mile an hour like that. You know, all of a sudden you go from, say, a fairly inexpensive countertops to the high-priced granite, and all of a sudden you've got a $1,000 faucet. You know, people say, oh, we won't do that, but then all of a sudden it appears.
Right. And well, and when somebody's looking at your home, if you're selling,
yes,
the faucet probably isn't going to sell your home, right?
No, it isn't. That's exactly right. I mean, I was in a house where they had a $35,000 light fixture in their entryway, and I thought, geez, for $35,000, I could put up a real nice shop, you know? And whenever I looked at it, I thought, boy, what a waste of money. And you know, that was me personally. But no, you know, and that didn't sell the house at all.
Right. Are there other things I'm thinking about? I lived in a ranch house, the last place that we lived, and the thing that drove me insane about the house was that in the living space, in the living room, there just wasn't enough light. It was very dark, and there, you know, there was a window, but it just didn't seem to let very much light into the house. It drove me insane. We actually brought somebody in to take a look at the house to see if we could put in skylights, and it was going to be incredibly expensive to put in skylights, so we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Is there a problem like that where you need to say, wait a minute, I may be living in the wrong house?
Yeah, yeah, there is that. You know, there again, you may have more people than what's comfortable in the house. You may not like the layout at all. And when you look at something, you know, like let's say that lighting issue, a lot of the rooms may be like that. It was kind of big in the ranch, and when we were building ranches in the 70s and 80s, it seemed like every room had a ceiling light right in the middle. And then we went to this phase where no lights on the ceiling. It was all, you know, plug-ins, mm-hmm. and you had to have these little lights in the corners. And I know exactly what you mean. It seemed like, geez, now we've got these shadows, and you can't see anything when you're in the middle of the room. You can look into some pretty good electrical costs, and then you really still don't have what you want. And so, yes, you may want to think about, you know, moving somewhere else. So then you've got this this issue of, do I buy another existing home and remodel it while I'm living in my first one? So you may have two mortgages, and you have a mess to work on, but at least you have some place to come home to that isn't so messy. Or do I just go ahead and build new? The things that really, you know, bear into that is, do I really like the location where I'm at? You know, do I like where the schools are? Do I have good access to, say, fire and your daily errands, things like that? Because if your nearest Casey's is 10 miles away and you're out in the country, you know, that's a lot of gas. You know, that's going to add up to almost as much sometimes your house payment driving back and forth. So, but you still have to look back at, what can I truly afford? What do I really need? You know, do I really need a 3,800 square foot house that there's only going to be two of us in? If I'm going to have four or five kids, then it's another story.
Right. So you really need to prioritize as well and think, okay, this thing may be driving me crazy, but what is really important in
what's
my
really
life
important
right now?
Sometimes it's good to bring a third party in, somebody that has no investment in it. Sometimes it is a friend that's a good enough friend that will tell you the things you don't want to hear.
And, well, Bill, we've got to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, and we're ready to take your calls, 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We're going to have a little less time to take your questions today. We're going to take home improvement questions for the next 20 minutes, and then we're going to spend some time talking about recent program changes at Iowa Public Radio. You'll have an opportunity to get in on that conversation as well. And Bill, let's start with the questions. This is from Sonia, and she says, we're trying to decide on traditional insulation versus foam insulation, but we've read some anecdotal horror stories on foam insulation. Any advice on what direction we should take?
If it's in a new home, or an existing home, that's really the difference. If it's an existing home. There are some real issues with putting any kind of insulation inside existing walls. Is the key to it is you need to make sure that the cavity is completely full. And so it depends on the age of the house. The older homes had a lot of maybe some debris or nailers, you know, wood going across the cavities that would stop insulation. Whether it's foam or it's cellulose, you know, you still have to fill that cavity. So let's say there are some stories out there with foam, but It usually comes down to the installer. A lot of the products are very good. There are a couple products out there that aren't performing very well, and I've seen some really horrible pictures too. But a lot of it does come down to a quality installer. You really have to do some checking, get plenty of references on jobs that they've done before with people. But really the only way that you can tell if that cavity is full is either with a small camera that's on a flexible rod that goes inside of the cavity, or an infrared camera. Otherwise, it's kind of a guessing game as whether that cavity is completely full. And if it's an older home that has the old knob and tube wiring, the knob and tube wiring would go across a small porcelain knob, and there's usually just two black wires that are nailed. You can usually, an electrician will tell you if you have that. And if you have that kind of insulation inside of a wall, you cannot put insulation around it, whether it's cellulose, fiberglass, foam, anything. Nothing can be touching that wiring, so you're going to have to either rewire or find an alternative method to insulate that wall, either on the outside or the inside. But, you know, the biggest thing is getting references for that installer.
Okay. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is an email from Ryan in Iowa City. He says, our house was built in 1920 and has plaster and lath wall construction. When we moved in 2003, there was a handful of minor hairline cracks in various walls in the house. We patched them with a light grout mix and painted over them. Since then the cracks have reopened but not widened. Should we be worried about any of this?
You know, I wouldn't be worried too much about a home that was built in the 1920s. It's what's happening possibly is your humidity levels may be changing inside the house, so you may get more expansion contraction of the actual wood. It's, you know, if the home was occupied before they moved, you know, for continuously occupied, or if it sat there for maybe a couple, 3 years empty, that a lot of times will cause cracks to occur, and then you try to patch them. The old lath and plaster is a good product. Sometimes the only thing it does show, though, since it's not really brittle, but is when the house maybe tends to move, does it go through seasonal expansion and contraction, that you will have some cracks. The other thing that may be happening is there may be, if especially on the ceiling, is maybe there's more load up on, say, the second floor than there was before, kids roughhousing up there or whatever, and maybe the framing wasn't designed for heavy loads, because a home in the 1920s maybe has gone through some extensive remodeling. And if that's the case, there may be areas of the house that are causing some structural issues as well. So keep an eye on them. You can always just re-drywall, take down a lath and plaster, and that's a good time to remodel. You know, maybe do one room at a time and then rewire. And if there's plumbing to be redone, you know, let's say there's some duct tape on some old drain pipes that may be dripping, things like that, to get that taken care of. But just keep an eye on it for now. And, document it, measure the cracks, take pictures of it. And, that's the best thing to do right now. Hopefully it's just expansion contraction because of, maybe excessive or less humidity inside the house.
And he has a second question too. So when you're talking about the house moving, it sounds like they do have that problem. He says, on a related note, our front porch shifts slightly throughout the seasons, causing, among other things, the front storm door to not close fully because the door frame is no longer square. This usually happens in the summertime, but this year with the dry weather early on, it was particularly bad. The front porch is supported on old style concrete blocks with a decorative face. What's the best way to take care of that?
Well, you know, a lot of those, you know, it sounds like possibly it was a kit home. A lot of times that's how you can tell by the concrete block foundations and supports, is a lot of times they did not go down 4 feet on those porch supports. So they go through whatever the ground is doing. So they'll go through a heaving and contraction with frost. And then like this year, when that ground dries down, the ground is moving. And that's usually where you do see it. You'll see it either on the door or like the steps. Going from your, like say, the sidewalk to the porch. So have someone come and check and make sure that there are footings underneath those support posts, because when you ever attach anything to the house, The house is designed, you know, it goes down to below frost level. So whatever you attach to the house, whether, you know, it's a roof or, you know, a small deck or something, everything has to be designed to move with it, especially if the roof is tied into the house. So that, whatever, that whole porch, that has to be down to, you know, 4 feet in the ground. And so I would be looking at that first, but most contractors can handle very easily that particular project. They'll temporarily brace the roof and the porch and maybe re-jack it up, but you also have to maybe do some research on the age of that house and maybe some old pictures, because some of these old porches were built with quite a bit of slope on the floor, and then, you know, we come along and think, oh, hey, this should be level. So then we start jacking something up, and we just completely ruin the whole porch. So you have to do some research on how it was originally built, and that is usually evident on the trim on the side of the porch or on the floor. You can usually tell how much they have cut an angle on some of the trim boards on the exterior of the sides of the porch. So sometimes that's a big key as well, is you do have to find out what it was designed like originally.
All right, and let's move on to the phones. You can join us at 866-780-9100. Jane is on the line from Holy Cross. Hello, Jane.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We live in an old farmhouse that needs a new roof, and I'm wondering if it's worth putting on a metal roof or if we should just go with the standard shingles.
Well, are you planning on staying there for quite a while?
Well, that's a question. We're both 69 and
okay.
Not sure.
Well,
probably 10 more years at least.
Well, you know, I really like the metal roofs, because I don't like having to worry about the you know, the hail issues and that. Is there quite a few layers of roofing on it right now?
I believe there's two.
Okay.
We have had it done once.
Okay. Now it's, you're not allowed to put any, like, say, two layers on anymore. They have to go all the way back down and put new sheeting down if you need it, or if the sheeting that they put down last time, hopefully maybe that's over the original rafters and that, or the original sheeting. You know, most shingles, you know, they have all these different 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 lifetime, all this, but it's only as good as your first really good hailstorm anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to be replaced. So you kind of have to make that option. And then when you look at steel, you know, there's a lot of variation. So, you know, do some driving around and see which ones you like. There are some that look just like what we've got on the pole barn. You know, you've got the fasteners exposed. But then they have the same color metal, though, with hidden fasteners. So you don't see the screws. You don't see anything except the metal. And you're starting to see a lot more of that. The price is starting to come down. And now if you want to have the shingle look, there are steel roofs that look like shingles.
Okay.
So I would go to, you know, the lumber yard or, you know, big box store. They've got a lot of displays. Take a look, and they'll say what the cost is. And there's pretty much everybody, every roofer now knows how to, you know, put on steel roofing correctly now. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Yep. Goodbye.
All right, Jane, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question about a home improvement project. I'm with Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, and Mark is on the line from Boone. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Great show.
Good.
I just wanted to reinforce something you had going, kind of going on a plan. We have a 110-year-old house, and over the last 10 years, we've done a section a year, and it's worked out great.
Good.
Got everything pretty much done except the basement, and we're ready to stay here now.
Well, you know, it was kind of nice is, you know, the cost, you can kind of, you know, spread that out, and you're always working on something. I mean, I always thought it was kind of fun. You know, I know a lot of people don't like that. You know, you're always in working phase, but it goes pretty well if you're, you know, if that's if you can handle that and if you like doing that.
Mark, thanks a lot for your call. And Bill, is part of working on your house all the time, do you have to finish those projects, or is that something you just want to keep those projects going?
Ooh,
all the time?
You're really pushing the button there, aren't you? My wife said she might be listening. So, you know, you really should finish those projects as you go along and move on to the next. rather than have maybe 20 of them half started like the one I'm sitting in right now. Thanks a lot, Jerry.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, okay. You really should finish, you know, each thing as you go, unless it ties in with another project down the road. But try to take it as far as you possibly can in a certain phase until the next phase ties in, especially if it has to do with, you know, anything with plumbing or electrical. You don't want to have anything kind of cobbled up and makeshift. You want to have those things working perfectly before you move on to the next phase. But I personally kind of like, I don't know, maybe so I am, I kind of like things maybe not quite finished all the way. There's that Chinese proverb that says, you know, when you're done with your house, you die. So I'm going to be living forever.
Well, and you're building a second home, so that just extends your life, right?
Yeah, it just doubles the things I don't have finished.
Perfect. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got time for a couple more questions before we let Bill go for the day. And Bill, I actually heard a recent news story that said that when people build a smaller home and they extend that home, they do a lot of additions, that the cost over time ends up being far more than if they had just built the home that they wanted in the first place. Now, of course, when you're looking at a loan, when you're looking at a mortgage, that may seem prohibitive, but is that something we need to think about as well, the cost over the long term?
Yes, yeah, you really do, but it all comes down as to what choices you make on the renovation or the remodeling as opposed to a new. Sometimes there's a lot of hidden costs on a new that you don't, you know, really realize that maybe come up as you go, but, you know, there's things hidden in a renovation as well, but it really depends on how you look at it. There's a lot of studies that say, you know, the opposite, that's a lot less money to do a renovation. But I've always kind of found out that renovations usually cost more per square foot. But then it's because sometimes a house renovation is more congested, so that's, you know, kind of brought down into a smaller area is why they're more expensive. Because there's a lot of the, you know, like books out there that are not so large house, not so big house, whatever that one is. You know, they're more useful, but yet the square footage cost is higher because it's smaller. You know, it's kind of hard to process sometimes that, but you don't have as much wasted space.
Right. Well, and I've seen a couple renovations up close and personal that in retrospect, you know, for example, when you have the kitchen done and you're going through all of the different cupboard options, then in the end, you may not end up having what you really want because you didn't really know what you really want. Is there a way to really find that out? I mean, can you get into a test kitchen and try things out?
You know, there's a lot of the kitchen companies have a lot of 3D stuff and interactive stuff. So, you know, that's a good place to start. But really, you know, just home shows and being observant. Whenever you're in someone's house, friends or, you know, like I said, like a home show, you know, really, really study that. Don't say, hey, boy, look at that nice finish. I love that it's oak or it's cherry. Look at the drawers, which, you know, look at how the doors work, the hinges, all those little intricacies, and how fluid is it for you possibly? Do you like that layout? You know, because if you're remodeling, you may not have enough room, say, between one side of the kitchen counters to the other because of the side of the room. You may only be able to have 4 feet where you may need to have six. So how are you going to get 2 more feet in that area if you're remodeling unless you punch the house out 2 feet?
Right.
That's exactly what you're saying. You know, you have to – it would really be nice if you could just step into a kitchen and they could just take and move the walls in and out, you know, while you're standing there and switch the cabinets. But it's just observation. You're just going to have to spend a lot of time and hold off on that remodeling. I mean, just don't jump into it until you're sure what you want, like you said. I mean, you get it all done, and that's really not what I wanted.
Carolyn is on the line from Marion. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
We live in Marion, Iowa, and 3 years ago, we had a hailstorm come through. I live in a neighborhood where all of the houses were built by the same builder. All of us with black roofs were denied any insurance coverage because, or any insurance money due to the hail damage, because we have black roofs, they cannot see the damage. They are all, I believe, CertainTeed shingles, but the houses were built after 2006, 2005. So it's not from the CertainTeed problem that was previous to that in the early 2000s. What can we do to show that we have the same shingles and have the same damage, even though they can't see it?
You know, sight isn't the only thing that they judge them on. I would get another party in there, get a, say, a building consultant, a professional building inspector, someone that is licensed with the state that comes in, and they can tell you whether they're damaged or not. Just looking at it by sight, that's something else. You can do that with a flashlight. You can lay a flashlight down on the roof at night. I mean, if they're going by sight, and you can see the dimples, you can see the tears on the edge of the shingles. It doesn't matter whether it's white, green, brown, whatever. If there's hail damage, there's hail damage. So I'd bring another person in.
All right, Carolyn, thank you so much for your call. Bill McAnally, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Charity. Have fun today.
All right, and we'll talk again next month.
All right, bye-bye.
Home improvement expert Bill McAnally on the line with us today from his home near Fort Dodge. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about some recent programming changes at Iowa Public Radio. Our CEO, Mary Grace Harrington, will be here in just a moment, and you'll have an opportunity to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. On Monday morning, Iowa Public Radio's FM 90.1 in central Iowa flipped to a new format. WOI-FM has been broadcasting a mix of news and classical music for decades. It now carries Iowa Public Radio's News and Studio One programming. This is a change that a whole lot of people are excited about. There are a lot of people who are upset about it as well, and we thought it would be a good idea to talk about it, find out how the decision was made. With me is Iowa Public Radio CEO Mary Grace Harrington. Hello, Mary Grace.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being here today. And also, Andrew Argenbright, Development Manager responsible for membership, is also here today. He's one of the people who's been handling a whole lot of the listener feedback. Hello, Andrew.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here as well. And Mary Grace, why did you and other decision makers at Iowa Public Radio decide to put News in Studio One on FM 90.1 in central Iowa?
Well, sure. And good question. As our listeners know, we became a statewide music, news, public radio service in 2006 as a result of a strategic move by the Board of Regents for the state of Iowa. And we began at that time to study listenership patterns and, more importantly, loyalty of our listeners all across the state, because now it's about being Iowa Public Radio. And what we noticed is that, particularly over the last 2 years, is that the combination of news during the day and Studio One programming on the in the evenings, which also has what we call the intelligent entertainment on the weekends, yields a larger listening audience, a more loyal listening audience, and a more age-diverse listening audience, allowing us to grow our audience space. So the reason that is important is, as our listeners know, IPR is member-supported. More than 30% of our volume of our operating support comes from our listeners, and the rest comes from sponsorships and major gifts. And this becomes even more critical in growing that audience and sustaining that audience so that we can sustain the service for many years to come.
There has been news programming coverage in central Iowa and across much of the state of Iowa on AM 640 for decades as well. Why isn't that adequate anymore?
Well, if you have been listening to AM, there is a definite quality difference in listening to our AM signals versus FM. And particularly here in central Iowa, the 100,000-watt 90.1 FM just gives you better strength, better capacity for delivering that. It's funny you mentioned that one. One of the listeners wrote in, "I am thrilled about the flip. I have been waiting 37 years years to be able to hear news programming before the sun rises in the winter months and on the weekends. Hurrah and many thanks. And the reason this listener writes that is because AM stations are required to power up and power down a little differently due to FCC regulations. And so if you're an early riser and wanting to listen to NPR's All Things Considered in the afternoon or NPR's Morning Edition in the morning, you struggle to actually hear it in the morning. You will not have that problem on 90.1 FM.
I'm sure a lot of news listeners are very excited about having access to 90.1 in central Iowa. Of course, classical music has been broadcast on that frequency for many, many years. So there are many classical listeners who are upset about the change. Now, in Des Moines, you have made changes that cover the classical music deficit.
Right. And we are there are some great changes, but we would love it if everything happened all at the same time. So what's happened in central Iowa, in the greater Des Moines area, is we added capacity with two other stations last year, low power stations, for 24/7 classical music. So essentially adding almost 30 hours of classical each week on those schedules. So now with the flip in central Iowa, in the greater Des Moines area specifically, there are four stations that listeners can tune to depending on do they live in the north side, the south side, west side, et cetera, and get 24/7 classical music, and then, of course, have 90.1 for their news and Studio One programming. What we are just as frustrated about is we have also a station under construction that will actually better serve the Ames community, surrounding community, with 24/7 classical. We hit some delays over the summer. We do anticipate, and we are on a deadline to complete that by January, and we're hoping we make a stretch goal of December. But everything just couldn't happen all at once, but that is the path to be able to all of our communities serve them with 24/7 classical and the news and Studio One combination format.
I'm sure there are some listeners in Ames right now thinking, well, why didn't you just delay the whole change?
That's a good question. And there are a number of reasons, some of them legal, some of them managing listenership, some of them managing funding. There are a number of reasons which, in discussing that at length this last spring with our board of directors, knowing it wasn't the perfect situation, we decided to move forward together.
There have also been some changes in weekend programming on the News and Studio One format stations. For example, at 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings, rather than hearing What Do You Know, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me will be on the air. So it'll be Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me at 10, This American Life at 11, and then What Do You Know on the air on a tape delay at noon. Tell me about those changes.
Sure. And again, studying those listener habits over the last 2 years specific to those programming hours and constantly tweaking it to make sure we're delivering to the largest audience. And that includes the third-party research we get from Arbitron ratings, but as well as the anecdotal, the feedback that we get from our listeners through Facebook or email or phone calls or just letters that I get. But the popularity of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and This American Life is just off the charts in the last couple of years. It's just fantastic. And there is a greater opportunity to serve the fans of those shows in the 10 to noon area. That's why we moved those up in the schedule. We also take a look, Charity, at what our peers and aspirants are doing throughout the United States. And we find that the majority of peers and aspirants are putting Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and This American Life in that time slot. Michael Feldman's show is very important to the state of Iowa. He's very important to us. We just hosted him in Cedar Falls for a live broadcast. So he is still on Saturdays, and we moved him to noon.
Car Talk is still at 9 a.m. on Saturday. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about that because, of course, the Car Talk guys are retiring in October. Will Car Talk in reruns remain on the schedule at the same time?
We do have Car Talk on the schedule and committed to that for this year, for this fiscal year. And we'll continue to monitor it. You know, the interesting thing is, The Car Talk guys have been dialing down their news shows over the last few years, and so actually listeners have been hearing some what they call repackaged shows for quite some time, and it still is so popular and still very popular in that time slot. So like all of our peers, we'll just be watching, but quite frankly, we are committed to Car Talk, repackaged or not, so are our listeners, so it's kind of a wait and see.
There have also been some changes on the Studio One part of the schedule on the weekends, and one of those very popular shows over the years, Backtracks with Bob Dore, that has been moved, and that will be on at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoons. Why make that change?
Yes, again, just by observing the response from listeners, and Bob Dore is just a gem when it comes to the state of Iowa and Studio One programming, and particularly this show Backtracks. But the time slot that it was in, it was experiencing a lot of volatility in listenership. And so our goal is to preserve Bob on our station as long as he's willing to. And so we're trying something. And that's a lot of what programming is trying something new, again, based on feedback from listeners and the data that we have, and try something and see how it works. And so our music director believes that the Saturday afternoon is a good slot for Backtracks.
I'm talking with IPR CEO Mary Grace Harrington about some of the programming changes that have taken place at Iowa Public Radio over the last couple of days. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Also with us is Andrew Argenbright, Development Manager responsible for membership. And Andrew, you've been answering a whole lot of emails. What seems to be the consensus that's building in your inbox?
Well, it's mainly questions from folks living in the Ames area, questions about classical music. So lucky for me, we have a plan in place, and we have the station in construction. So, you know, I've been very happy to let people know that this is just temporary. That the classical music that's off in that area will be back up and running during the winter. So that I would say that's been the primary question that email, phone calls that I've received.
We have a tweet from Jess. She says, why did one of my favorite programs, Mountain Stage, get moved to such an unfortunate time slot? And Mountain Stage has been moved to 10 p.m. on Saturday nights.
Good question, or good tweet from that Studio One fan. And again, our music director, Al Scherz, who's been with us for, over 20 years, and again, studying the success of the Studio One format and the feedback, again, from listeners, Mountain Stage didn't go away. It just moved to a different time slot so that we could improve Saturday afternoons with Java Blend and Backtracks, and then Studio One in the evening. So again, it's all about making sure it's in the best, most successful time slot that garners the greatest listenership.
We have a couple of emails on similar subjects. This one is from Michael. He says, why can't you dedicate an FM station to playing your AM programming 24 hours a day? I'd much prefer listening to you over turning on the television at sunset. And then this is another email from a different Mike. He says, the 640 AM signal is rather weak and prone to static, especially during a storm. Any chance of putting it on either 90.1 or 101.7 FM, then one of them would be an all-news station. Is there a plan for an all-news Iowa Public Radio on FM in the future?
You know, as we grow the network, and grow has a lot of meaning here. It's grow in resources and capacity of people and infrastructure, but more importantly, it's about grow in funding to be able to support that. Our long-term strategic plan, and the listener is on the right track, is in every market to make sure we're serving 24/7 classical, 24/7 Studio One and news. And if we have the opportunity to have a 24/7 all news, there is an appetite for that out there. We don't have the resources, the capacity to do it in the number of frequencies to divide that up right now. But I tell you, that is something we continue to look at, and it would be fabulous if we're able to offer that to our listeners in the future.
John is on the line now from Des Moines. Hello, John.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm just a comment and a question. I was not, this was the change is okay, I guess, if that's what you want to do. But I wasn't aware that this was going to happen. And then, so now I'm scrambling trying to figure out where to find, I live in northwest Des Moines, and I'm scrambling trying to figure out where to find classical. So, in the future, maybe you could better advertise your programming changes so people know what to expect, and let me know where I can find classical now.
John, that I'm glad you brought that up, and I appreciate your comment. It's always a challenge to try to create a communication plan that hits everybody at the time that they're listening or reading their mail or that kind of thing. So what we did, just so you know, and then I do want to direct you where you can find all the information, we ran print ads in 7 of the markets that were impacted by the changes, actually over this last weekend. We sent a direct mail postcard driving people to a website with this information in about 14 counties. If you are a member, you did receive communication in our e-newsletter. We have been running on-air announcements, but most importantly is the web promotion. If you do have access to the internet, you can log on to iprflip.org, and you can easily print and see all of the schedules, the new weekend lineup, the weekday, and more importantly, John, to your question, the signals. So in your area, where those 24/7 classical signals are that reach your community. For those that do not have access to the internet, just give us a call on our 800 number, and we can print those schedules for you and get it in the mail to you right away.
And then what is the 800 number?
1-800-861-8000.
All right, 1-800-861-8000. And let's go back to the phones. This is William on the line from Des Moines. Hello, William.
Hi. I was wondering about Thistle and Shamrock. Is that program available, and on what stations and what time?
William, thanks for your call. I'm a huge fan of Thistle and Shamrock, too. And it is still in its same time slot. It is on Sunday afternoons at noon on the Studio One weekend schedule. So if you are in the Des Moines area, that will be on 90.1 FM.
All right. And it has changed a little bit in time, though, right? Or no, it hasn't.
No, it's still on at noon. Still
the
on at
noon. The schedule just
right
looks different.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
So as these changes have taken place and you continue to communicate with a lot of people over time, you mentioned the website Mary Grace, and you're also encouraging people to get in touch with you if they have questions?
Yes. On our website, there are opportunities to contact us. Generally, if you're on the website and you look at the top navigation bar, it says contact us, and you can write specifically to me, CEO@, or if you have a question that is or a comment particular to our music program, you can write directly to our music director, Al Scherz. We strive to respond to all listener feedback in 3 business days. Sometimes given the week, it might take us a week or the weekend to catch up, but it is our goal to respond to everyone. And then we do share those comments with our board of directors at our bi-monthly board of directors meetings. So the feedback is very important to us. And you can always call.
Mary Grace, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Iowa Public Radio CEO Mary Grace Harrington. Andrew Argenbright, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Development manager responsible for membership. You can find out more about the changes at Iowa Public Radio on our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can also go to iprflip.org. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, I'll talk with Lawrence Apple about the latest research into obesity. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.